Coming up on this week's book show. In addition to being a best-selling author, Archer Mayer is a death investigator for the State Medical Examiner of Vermont. In Mayer's latest novel, Bomber's Moon, the murder of a small-time drug dealer snowballs into the most complex case ever faced by Joe Gunther and his Vermont Bureau of Investigation team. Joe Donahue speaks with Archer Mayer on this week's book show. Welcome to The Book Show, a celebration of reading and writers. Archer Mayer is the author of the critically acclaimed series of police novels featuring Lieutenant Joe Gunther of the Brattleboro, Vermont Police Department. His latest in the series is entitled Bomber's Moon. Book Show host Joe Donahue spoke with Archer Mayer.
Very nice to have you back. Very nice to have you here to celebrate the 30th in this series. That seems like quite an accomplishment.
Well, I guess so, except I just finished 31, so in a way I'm living up to my warning to people that if they enjoy the series, then expect a long ride, because it's an interminable series of books, and I am determined to make it interminable.
Okay, so let's go back and say, did you ever think in the first novel, oh, I would be writing the 30th in this series?
Not the 30th, no. I knew it was going to be a series, however, and I even structured it in my head to be so, because I was interested in a number of things. One was character development. These are who stories, not what stories. I also wanted to explore the state and its various functions, political, societal, and other.
The state of Vermont.
The state of Vermont, indeed. Here we are in New York, so I should clarify. The next thing was that I wasn't so befuddled or misguided as to believe that I could write a single Joe Gunther and then start checking out real estate for the island adjacent to Johnny Depp's. I figured I would be better be in here for the long haul. At the time, the average income of an American writer was approximately $8,000 to $10,000 a year. I wanted to beat that, and I knew that I had to roll up my sleeves in order to do so.
When you have a protagonist who then hits, island aside, you have a contract that allows you, I assume, to keep writing them, which is pretty darn good.
It is not an island, but it is employment. And of course, this is the interesting thing. I had another ambition from the get-go, which, when I expressed it, stimulated such expressions of bemusement that I stopped expressing it. And it was as follows. I want to be the writer who walks into a cocktail party, that ages me right there, and says, is confronted with, well, what do you do? And I answer, I'm a writer. Well, of course, the next rejoinder is traditionally, well, what have you written? And I would then rattle off 2, 3, 4 titles, and they would then look at me meditatively and respond with, oh.
Yeah.
Because they'd never heard of me. Now, the reason this was my aspiration was because I started the explanation by saying, I am a professional writer. That means it is my living. That is how I pay my bills. The fact that they'd never heard of me proved that I had achieved middle classdom, which to me was a realistic ambition.
Yeah.
Not to be Stephen King. There's one of him, or maybe a few others. But generally, if you want to get ahead in life, you shoot for something realistic. And I thought the middle classdom of writers, which is actually thinly populated, was nevertheless available to me. And indeed, that's where I am.
Do you still think, because I remember, so this is the 30th novel, we've known each other over 25 years probably.
Easily, yes.
So I remember a point where I would get pitched to talk to you, like I needed a pitch, right?
Right.
And I would think to myself, oh, and they would always say, oh, you know, this is going to be the book that does it. This is going to be the book, bam,
yeah.
Boom,
yeah.
Sends them out of the, out into the atmosphere.
Yes.
But I think just by being here this long and doing this and having the events and the readers and the people that love you, that's pretty darn good.
Yeah. I'm a good plumber. I'm a good sheetrocker. I'm a good electrician, you know. I give you quality goods.
Yeah.
Word of mouth gets passed around. And people pick up my goods, in this case a book, every year. It's at the same time every year. It's about the same length every year. It is original every time. I don't repeat myself. I stick my neck out. I venture into the unknown within my capabilities. I'm saddled with my voice. I'm saddled with my state. I'm saddled with the genre and the characters. But I refuse to be saddled with a template.
I think you and I have talked about this, but is there a point where, I realize this is a futile goal, but do you ever think to yourself, all right, well, why does that person who has less novels than I do is selling more books than I am? Your writing is beautiful. You get fantastic reviews. I mean, is it just silly to think in those terms? Or sometimes do you think to yourself, well, how does that work?
No, I think it is silly to think in those terms. We live in a somewhat chaotic environment. We are natural creatures in a natural world which is buffeted by extremely unpredictable but somewhat natural events. To try to superimpose a rational order on that is to put human arrogance on a level that is truly impossible to consider.
Especially, and I'm talking to a guy who writes about chaos and who works with chaos pretty much every day.
Yes, indeed I do.
So you're a death investigator, you're a fire investigator, you write these novels. There's a lot going on in your world. So expecting anything to turn out the way that you want it to, I guess, is sort of a fool's errand in and of itself.
In and of itself, indeed. I visit the flip side of that, as you accurately portrayed, every day. I'm used to it. I'm the product of it. Having been kicked around a little bit as a youth and learned that life is filled with unexpected surprises and that can either knock you over or you can make it a strength.
Archer Mayer is our guest. The name of the new novel is Bomber's Moon. When you started this, did you know that it was the 30th? Like, did you think, oh, I have to do something special for the 30th?
Or, no.
Or was it when you sent it in, somebody said, oh, this is the 30th?
This is going to sound positively goody-two-shoes, but there is no book I don't start hoping that this is going to be a really terrific book.
Oh, sure.
They all turn out lesser than what I imagined. People always say, what's your favorite book? I always answer, it's the one in my head because I haven't screwed it up yet by writing it.
Good
your
answer.
Your words of praise are a balm to my soul and much appreciated, but I never kid myself that I couldn't do better.
So when it comes to this particular story, it seems like you always have something in mind. And this involves an investigative journalist and sort of people outside of Joe Gunther's orbit that are all maybe working together, maybe working against each other to
Correct.
Try to figure out what's going on.
Correct. The sort of the theme, I always try to shoot for a very loosey-goosey theme. And this one was contrasts. Even to some extent, extremes. So I looked at cultural opposites. I looked at economic opposites. I looked at dynamic opposites. You put your finger on it. I have journalists on one side, private investigators on another side, and, of course, police officers on a third, just to mention the good guys.
Right.
And then the bad guys are motivated by a variety of contrasting stimuli. So, yes, this is kind of the way we function in the real world. We have to make alliances. We have to make allowances. We have to occasionally draw the line and say, you know, I just can't step over that. Police officers are obviously constrained in this, but I thought to introduce the world of private investigators looking through a similar lens might be also interesting, and then to put in the third component, which is journalism. So I did all of that in this book.
It seems, as you just said, that's what I enjoyed about this book, because you learn where the private investigator, where the investigative journalist can go that the police officer cannot, and they seem sometimes a little jealous of that.
Yeah, I think so. I functioned as a police officer for 15 years, and in the tribe, we would regard private eyes down our long regal noses. But in fact, they fulfill an unexpectedly useful and constructive role if they're put to proper and good use, and the ones with moral character will do so. And it is indeed quite hamstringing, if that's a word, for police officers to look at the mobility that private eyes have that police officers do not.
I know a little bit about your background, and did you work as a journalist?
I did.
You were a journalist for a while.
Yes, in and out. I'm a restless soul. So yeah, exactly. I think the last full time job I ever held was in the late 1970s. So every job I take sort of as a contract, and so journalism has come and gone in my life.
So does that help in this of exploring, or has the profession changed so that it's as if you're looking into what a baker does or something? It's just another world.
The world of journalism has certainly expanded beyond comprehension or imagination, but its foundations, if pursued with integrity, have not changed. You always check your sources multiple times. You always are in pursuit of the truth, as corny as that sounds. And you always serve as the clarion between the unknown and the public who deserves to know.
There are many former journalists who are writing crime novels now. And John Sanford being one, Michael Connelly being another one.
Yeah.
So my question to you is, and they will all have said on this very program, that being a journalist helps in writing fiction. Do you believe that to be the case?
I do, sure. I wouldn't say that the absence of it is a detriment. I just think that meeting deadlines, being easy with interviewing people and going to places that your mother didn't want you to visit is a good training school.
When you take on a particular project, as you say, you have a schedule and they come out the same time and you look at that. Does that give it a routine that you need to be able to do the other aspects of your life?
It allows me room to fit in the other aspects. It's been a pretty eccentric professional life. At one point, not too terribly many years ago, I literally had, on the basis of what defines a full-time job, three simultaneous full-time jobs, the death investigator, law enforcement, and the writing. So therefore, it's important that, A, I can comfortably manage a schedule like that, which I no longer pursue, by the way. I'm retired as a police officer, but I still hold the other two, and they occasionally conflict. They obviously aid and abet. And in both cases, since I never regard a day as having 8 hours in it, my work schedule is extraordinarily fluid, generous, and flexible. Therefore, I might be writing at 3 a.m. I certainly may be standing over a dead body at 3 a.m. And the fact that it is dark and gloomy makes no matter to me, or that I interrupted dinner to do that. I do not lead a regulated life. I lead a life of stimulus, of education, of exposure to the unexpected. And I cherish that. And if there is a downside, as there often is in some of the activities, when I was a police officer, for example, I investigated sex crimes against children. And that can bring its weight with it and its own baggage. I have an outlet. Not that I would write about that in my fiction, but at least I can talk about people under stress and dire situations in a mellifluous and constructive way within the confines of my writing. So I've got a relief valve.
You gave a scenario a moment ago, but if you're standing over a dead body, say at 2 o'clock in the afternoon and it's a sunny day, do you think ever think to yourself, all right, well, it'd be better if I write about something like this. It'd be better if it was at 3 a.m, and it'd be better if it was raining. And I mean, do you think in those terms?
I think in somewhat less mechanical terms. I will occasionally borrow the emotions, both without and within, from such scenes. So I would be an idiot not to say that these scenes that I visit frequently. 2 weeks ago when I was on call, I had 7 in 1 week. So I go out a lot. 7 deaths.
7
to investigate.
Deaths.
Yeah. And they run the gamut. So I'm out there a
Seems
fair
like a
amount.
Lot in Vermont, right?
Is well, that it does. It does.
I mean, but, is that the entire state?
No, I cover the southeast corner.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
Yeah. We get called out fairly frequently.
And I don't even mean for Vermont. That's not a put down in Vermont. It just seems a lot wherever
it is
you would
fair.
Be.
We have few people. I joke that there are only 25 of us in the state. So there are a few more, but we don't have many residents. And yet we try to investigate every single death that is unattended and unexplained and unaccompanied by a doctor standing basically nearby saying, oh, no, this is all very cool. We saw it coming.
And I certainly don't in any way question your professionalism in that regard at all. I do wonder, though, if Joe Gunther ever comes into your head.
Now, here is the bright and solid line. No case that I investigate will ever make it into a novel. However, having stated that absolute, this is where I was heading in my previous answer, which is that I will absolutely beg, borrow, and steal the emotions, the circumstances, sometimes even the settings, but I will always change enough attached to each to make them unrecognizable to anybody else who was at that scene.
Certainly, understood. But do you ever think in your mind as you are going about this task, which can at times be gruesome, even if it's a flash, that you think of how Joe would think or make the note of this is something that Joe would do?
I think that's fair. I am JoJo is me in so far as all the characters come from within, and
right.
They have to draw their character and the way their behaviors from me. So the way I think it's actually been helpful in both ways. The scenes instruct me as to the physicality and the reality of emotional outlays, if you will. But the writing helps me to visit these scenes in an organized, methodical way, much as Joe would approach it. So in funny ways that I hadn't actually thought until you asked this question, so good for you, this is another layer of symbiotic support between my investigative life and my writerly life.
Archer Mayer is our guest. The name of the new novel is Bomber's Moon. It is the 30th in the Joe Gunther series. Let us talk for a moment about Joe Gunther in the sense of the nature of this character. I assume, and I've been told this by others, so I assume that if you're going to write about a person for 30 books, you have to like the person.
I think that'd be good. Otherwise, you better spend some extra money on a shrink.
Right. You like this. I mean, you create. He's your creation.
He is my creation, but he is not my only creation. I have another character who works parallel with Joe Gunther named Willie Kunkel, an unlikely
name. I love
Willie,
yes, but a very Vermont name, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Or somewhat, New England name,
yes,
I say.
Yes, exactly right.
Dickensian.
Yes, that's quite true. And Willie and Joe, to my mind, if you step back and think in global terms, really are sort of counterintuitive parts of a single soul. We all have Joe Gunther in us. I'll guarantee you we all have Willie in us. Obviously, a caricatured exemplar of that is that since Joe is thoughtful, avuncular, helpful, a team player, just a magnificent regular, not a superhero, but a regular, thoughtful guy, a man of moral stature, you would like to spend each day emulating him more than, you know, Willie Kunkel. And yet, if someone cuts you off in traffic and you're late to work, you're going to have a Willie moment, which Joe would not have.
Right.
So what have I done? I've given my readers two characters on which to hang their hats. They can aspire to be Joe, and they can be Joe because I make him with clay feet and I give him three dimensions as a regular human being. But I make it allowable for them to have their Willie moments because I have also made of Willie, for all his acerbic outlook, his cynicism, his short temper, his judgmental nature, I have made of him a moral human being with rigid integrity.
But for, and I'm basically speaking for myself now, but I don't think I'm alone in this, but I certainly understand your point and agree with it, although I also come to these books of thinking of them as a set. You know, you think of them as a great duo.
I agree. And this, I mean, what we're talking about in a funny kind of way is the idealized marriage.
Right.
To possibly contrasting human beings who absolutely respect and engage with one another in a constructive and positive way. And they do, although Willie can be tough to live with every once in a while, but Joe has the wherewithal to see the advantages in maintaining the relationship.
I'm interested in how much you think not look at the competition, for want of a better term, but the other books of this type of thinking of, all right, well, this police chief, you know, there's what we think of as the caricature that is in crime fiction of the cop who's sort of outdated and has had a tough time in life and is on his second or third marriage and there's the alcohol problem that's behind them and they're still fighting that. These tropes that tend to come with this territory that you seem to maybe occasionally bump into, but pretty much usually just step over.
Yeah, it's not of interest to me. And perhaps it's because I have allowed myself to operate by and large in a vacuum. I'm here to confess that I, in fact, don't read murder mysteries. And part of it is because my life is chaotic and bloody enough. But it's also, I mean, can you imagine me curling up with a good mystery at the end of the day? I don't think so. But but that having been said, I also don't want to crowd my head with similar type literature. The part of what I hope to bring to this series of books is new stuff, outsider stuff, invigorating stuff, rather than old tropes and memes that mirror pre-existing templates.
Now, I would say, again, as an outsider, but just as someone who interviews authors, that is fairly rare. That people who tend to write, let us say, genre fiction,
yes,
tend to read a lot of what they themselves produce. So I find that interesting that you don't do that.
I think you're right. I eavesdrop when I have to go to a meeting that involves a lot of other writers, and they always ask and talk about the other people in the genre that they read, and I'm always astonished at the depth of my disengagement. I just don't know what the hell they're talking about.
So let me ask this question a different way. You ready?
Yeah.
They don't send you books to put a blurb on.
No, they do not.
Yeah, because you don't, you're not going to read it.
I'm not going to read it. It's not a pleasure of mine. And therefore, also being an ex-editor, I'm going to be tough as nails. It's been tried before. I warn people not to do it. And occasionally, for some reason, just because there's never a never.
they figure, oh, maybe he's mellowed.
Yeah, we'll catch him at a weak moment. And they send me a manuscript. And I said, I hate it. Is that a good blurb? Is that going to work for you? And of course, you know, there's deathly silence. And they don't ask me again.
Now, with that said, were there people that you admired when you were starting this, or that you would have wanted to have read your early work and blurbed it?
Yes, and here's the other irony, Joe, is that every once in a while someone has slipped under the door, closed though it may appear. And I have read those books, and I actually have, in 30 years, produced a couple of blurbs that were extraordinarily strong and supportive, because I looked at those and went, this is damn well written, and that's what I'm looking for. I'm looking for good storytelling, compelling humanism, something that creates in my mind that mental movie that we readers all so enjoy. And if this person can give me a tale placed in a real world that's filled with blood and guts and car chases and whatnot, I'll give them a thumbs up.
Okay, you said it, movie. Has Hollywood ever come calling?
Hollywood does come calling, and it has done so multiple times. Obviously, you haven't seen me at the Metroplex, so we know how that ended up. I think that the movie-making business is by and large founded on the concept of not making movies. And the explanation for that is not the least bit cynical. It's that if you're sitting at the front office and they propose to you a project and you say, hey, this is good, let's do it, and it costs $80 million in bombs, you're out of a job. Whereas if you said, thank you for your thought and we really appreciate your interest, and it's a very nice book, but we're not going to make a movie out of it, you're still employed because you haven't cost your boss a dime. So the movie-making business is a lot tougher than people think, and it's also filled with people who, therefore, given that attitude I just expressed, are more inclined to do Porky's 34 than they are to do something shockingly original.
You know, now, 32 was pretty good, but 34 was kind of a stretch.
You didn't like that one. Nah, okay. I guess it ran out of gas, sad to say. So you and I will be reduced to being the only ones watching it late night eating popcorn.
Archer Mayer is the author of the new novel, Bomber's Moon. It is a Joe Gunther novel. It is out for Minotaur Books, and it is the 30th of the Joe Gunther series. Congratulations on that. Congratulations on the new novel and all the work as well.
Thank you, Joe.
A great pleasure.
A delight.
Thank you to you. Archer Mayer is our guest. Bomber's Moon is the name of the novel. We enjoy hearing from our listeners about our shows, and you can email us at book@wamc.org. And you can listen again to this or find past book shows via podcast or at wamc.org. Sarah LeDuc produces our program. Bookmark us for next week. And thanks for listening for The Book Show. I'm Joe Donahue.